Welcome to the 107th episode of the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast. My name's Quizmaster Lee. As usual, I'm joined by the right out of the gate. I set this thing up right out of the gate to have a cool title for
the
you.
Insa
Mark Davis. It's Mark Davis.
Hello.
Insa Mark Davis.
Hi.
I was going to call you the instantly interesting inquisitive questionnaire.
Ooh.
But my mouth just gave up right out of the gate. I was like, yeah, no.
It's just immediately like, Insa Tapapa.
Let that be the last mistake that I make here on this podcast today. Mark, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I am pleased to announce that last week our call for reviews worked.
Ooh.
We received one review.
Hell yeah.
It's from Jumbo Jimbo Can. The subject is Felt Bad. Felt Bad.
Okay.
Here's the review. Always my go-to on a Monday morning on the way to work and felt super sad thinking that they wake up every morning checking for a 5-star review. Nice enough to give us 5 stars. Thank you, Jumbo Jimbo Can. Yeah.
Well, that's nice of him. I thought maybe he felt bad that we woke up looking and gave us a 2-star review for
just to rub it in.
Yeah. I want to apologize also. Recording remotely, I think I talked to you a while ago. I don't know how many people listen to this this podcast with their volume up or with earbuds, whatnot. And we've spoken previously about mouth noises, but Mike C mentioned something about a jingly sound, something similar to a faraway tambourine that I couldn't pinpoint. It was my ceiling fan.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
So
I remember you bringing this up to me.
Yep. I
thought you guys were pranking me. I cannot find this jingly jangly noise.
I could hear it, but I thought it was on your track. However, I believe it was mine. Last night when I was laying in bed, I was like, oh my God, that sound.
What was that, episode 104?
That's the sound. I mean, it's been on pretty much every episode since.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you can probably hear it on almost every episode since we've been doing remote, but.
You can't point it out, Mark, because now that's all people are going to hear. They're going to notice it now. Cursed them, Mark.
Hopefully they've already heard all those episodes and they've forgotten them. And
Please forgive us.
From here on, they won't hear it because. Pure silence, baby.
Right. If you've made it to 107, now you can enjoy this Easter egg from previous episodes.
Ta-da.
Yeah. But thank you. We appreciate all the reviews, all the feedback that we get. Of course, you can write us at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com if you have anything like that. But yes, thank you, Jumbo Jim Can, for the review. And, sometimes it's not just the morning. I will check it in the mid-afternoon. I will check it in the evening. I will check it before bed. I check it constantly, basically.
Sometimes he'll just text me at 4 in the morning. And we'll just say, hey, just want to let you know, no reviews.
Yeah, and I would say then, at least as often as I check my email, at least.
Well, there you go. So if anybody wants to follow in Jumbo Jimbo Can's footsteps, we love the reviews. We eat them up. They're like dessert for us. So please.
Indeed. And Mark, before we get to our weekly wrap up and talk about how our players did at our trivia, our respective virtual trivias this week, I just thought maybe we could give each other a little preview of the categories we have for today's quiz.
Please tell me what you've got.
Well, for me, it will be a masculine first round with topics including television, pseudonyms, and sports. In the second round, we'll be going over some of the finer things. I'll be quizzing you about Broadway revivals, classical music, and famous quotes. And finally, I'll have a question about celebrity business ventures.
And for you, I have a question about music, a question about fashion designers, and a question about chemicals, as in your favorite, the periodic table of elements, chemicals. The second round, we have a question about original names for companies. We have a question about movies. And a question about cartoons. And for the last question, it's a question regarding the presidents.
Okay. Not too bad. Doesn't sound too bad. I am fearing that chemistry question, though.
Mm.
Chemicals. You said chemicals, though.
Yeah, it's a chemical element.
Okay. Oh, okay. Chemical element. Gotcha. I guess, yeah, that would be literally a chemical. In my mind, though, chemicals are, like, synthetic automatically. When I say chemicals, I don't know what that is. I just see, like, a big brown bottle with an X on it. Don't drink this. And I say, ooh, I want
it. Stay away. Please give it to me.
You know, I always think, like, before we record the podcast, I'm just going to, like, take a look at the globe and look at a periodic table chart just for, like, a little extra good luck. And I did not. I did not look at either of those all week. So I'm in the same boat as last week. We'll get to some of that in our miscorrections. But first, Mark, before we get to those and our quiz, let's go over our weekly wrap-up, shall we?
Okay.
How was Nice Guys Pizza Trivia on Wednesday?
It was good. It was good. Interesting. Strange in a couple of different ways. We had a couple people come back. We had a couple of people join for the first time, such as Grantastic Glenn,
who came by to play. Glenntastic Glenn.
Yes, not to be confused with a Glenntastic Glenn. And we also had a team composed of two women named Mariah and Paige, going under the name High Fidelity, that came in there and basically, spoiler alert, just whooped everyone's ass. 23 points in the first round. The next closest team was 13 points. By the end of the second round, they had 46 points. The next closest team was 27 points. And they won the whole game with 87 points. They ended up finding us, I believe Mariah is a fan of the Nice Guys Facebook page. And her friend Paige and her play virtual trivia different places, and came in and just took the place by storm. Wow. Both of them live abroad, so they basically deferred their wares to the next closest team, which with 47 points was the usual suspect, Ian.
Hey!
Yeah. Good job, Ian. Yeah, very there nice. You go.
And how did Glenn do?
So Glenn did not do so hot. Glenn did not do very well. It was very good to meet him. He's a very, very nice guy playing with his girlfriend. Glenn ended up with negative 3 points.
Ooh.
Yeah. So we talked negative. A little bit. Yeah, it was interesting. We talked a little bit, first of all, about how one of his strengths is pop culture, of which you have many questions. And also talking about the strength of not falling into the trap of answering questions that you don't know the answer to, which I was telling him was one of the problems I have with your trivia, is that the same reason I'm not good at chess, I am bad at Twitch trivia, in that I get really impatient. And so I'll be like, I don't know. Okay, I won't answer. I don't know. I won't answer. And then I'll be like, I don't know, but I don't want to just sit here not answering. So this seems kind of right. And then it's wrong. And then I'm like, well, I already got negative 10,000 points. So now I may as well just start, like,
you got everything shooting in the dark.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, yeah. Well, you know, I got a 1 out of 4 shot. You know, maybe one of the answers is a definite no. Now we're talking 1 out of 3. And then it's, you know, it's just tank or
that is
sore.
An interesting component that I hadn't considered. Kind of just the stress of the game itself on your score. And then that indicating your late game behavior on the Twitch trivia and making you take more risks and either driving yourself deeper. Because let's say you have negative 3,000 points. What are the chances that everybody else is going to continually spam the wrong answer to bring themselves down to your level? You have no choice. You have to participate at that point.
Right. You know? Yeah. It's kind of like how a lot of people view the wager question in our trivias, mm-hmm. where they're like, well, you know, we're sitting at 40 points. This other team has, you know, 50 or 60 points. You know, unless we know that we have the wrong answer and, like, we have no basis whatsoever to, like, even start for an answer being correct, we have to wager it all. You know, mm-hmm. like, we've just got to put it all on the line. And, yeah, I mean, playing Twitch trivia, especially one where a lot of the answers are difficult, it's like a waiting game. You know, it's kind of like hunting. You're laying there smelling like deer piss, covered in soot, wearing a ghillie suit, just kind of sitting there and like waiting. And it's like, well, I know I'm bored, but if I fucking move around, I basically blow the whole operation and I gotta get up and go somewhere else and lay down for another 8 hours. So like,
get your ghillie tillied.
Exactly. So yeah, last night I played your trivia, as you know, and I did a little because I was like, maybe if I just like really, really tamper down, and I was doing well. And then I went to go meet my friend for dinner right near the end of the audio round, right near the end of the second round, and I completely blew it.
Mm. Yeah. Well, appreciate you hanging out for that. As you know, we had two quizzes and an audio round, like you mentioned. Grantastic Glenn won our first game of the evening. That would be quiz number 55 with 125,121 points, earning his third win in a row, a turkey, at No Nonsense Trivia on Twitch. Yes. But he was upset by Acrobatic Donut for quiz number 56, who earned 123,861 points there. And we had a cartoon theme song audio round, identify the cartoon theme song. Grantastic Glenn earning the top spot there. Had a few glitches in that audio round.
Oh, yeah.
For those that were there, thank you for making the best of that. I think when I was bouncing the audio samples, the clips, I had dragged like the numbers out of a different order, but I didn't double check to make sure, you know, afterwards. Anyways, yeah. My bad.
An interesting fact also, Acrobatic Donut was the name that was given specifically to my mouth while I did a short stint in Sing Sing. So
acrobatic.
You know, yeah. Well, you know, it goes all around. The things these lips can do, Lee.
Is it like a gymnastic donut? What's the difference between gymnastics and acrobatics? Acrobatics is in the air?
Yeah, I would say so. It probably like has more to do, like it probably incorporates air more.
Oh, very interesting nickname then. For your time in Sing Sing.
Thank you, yeah. I had tied up sheets to the ceiling, and people originally thought I was going to kill myself. But no, I was just...
It was a survival mechanism.
Yeah, it's this whole thing I would do where I would do flips, and my lips would graze various parts of the anatomy, and I would do like another little flip and a... like kind of like the Flying Walendas. It was a whole thing.
I think we found your next podcast, Mark.
Yeah. Well, I don't give it away for free, baby.
You can play Nice Guys Pizza Trivia with Mark Davis on Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Just find the Zoom link in the description of this episode or go onto the Nice Guys Pizza Facebook page. It's a good time, as you can tell. And if you want to play No Nonsense Trivia in the coming weeks, you can do so by visiting twitch.tv/No Nonsense Trivia, where we are streaming live on Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern. Make sure you follow us on social media to stay updated on all our podcast streams and events. Join us.
Won't you? Yeah. Honey, let your nipples shine down. Honey, let your nips shine down.
We got weird on the trivia podcast.
Yeah.
Or on the Twitch trivia last night.
I did ask everybody who here likes their nips, and no one responded, I don't think.
You would not stop talking about it.
Well, I just brought it up twice.
Right. Well, maybe three times.
Maybe three times.
Somebody, you were like, I just want everybody to know I like my nips. And well, somebody was like, we know.
Well, at first, I asked who here likes their nips, because I made a nip joke.
Mm-hmm. And nipples was a category.
Oh, nipples was a category. And then, much to my chagrin, no one was proud of their nipples. Not a one. So I offered, I like my nips, you know, like, no, it's okay to be proud.
Mine are fine. I wouldn't say I'm proud, but they're fine. I have no qualm with them.
Ain't too proud to nip. Mm-hmm. Sweet darling.
The little bumps around the areola, Mark. Do you remember what those are called? That was what the question was. What's the term for the little bumps that are around the areola?
Oh, I do remember this because I made a joke about the name. Montgomery's glands. And I remember that because I called them Montcomery's glands.
So they're also known as Montgomery bumps, which sounds like Montgomery Burns, kind of.
Or it sounds like a bad STD that you get.
I got the Montgomery bump.
You want to go behind? You want to go behind the shed and shag? Mm-hmm. No, I got Montgomery bumps.
No, we established those are the Anfield bumps. I think because Anfield was asking about the bumps on the genitalia. It was like, you get those. Those are yours.
Oh, great. Thanks.
We have fun on the trivia, folks. And we're going to have fun in round one after we take a little bitty break. Nice little break there. Mark, how about a question?
I would love to give you a question.
Thank you.
Music is the category.
Lovely.
What jazz, R&B, and soul singer known as the Acrobat of Scat, speaking of acrobatic donuts, the Acrobat of Scat won 7 Grammys in his lifetime and is also known for singing the theme song for the TV series Moonlighting.
The Acrobat of Scat.
What'd you call me? That was my other nickname. That was my
John
like,
McAfee.
That was my nighttime nickname. When it was lights out, I turned from the acrobatic donut to the Acrobat of Scat.
Software developer John McAfee reportedly enjoyed sitting underneath a hammock while ladies pooped on him.
There's a hole cut out.
I don't know if he's the acrobat in that situation.
No, she
he's
is.
Under,
she's
he's
in
under
the
hammock. Yeah. No.
He's just the crowd.
Right. The hungry audience.
So hungry.
But who's the acrobat of scat? We're not talking about scatology now. We're talking about skidoo bop bop, bee doo doo bop bop, ba da doo doo bop bop.
I love to dwee when I scat.
So there's Scatman John. Scatman John Crothers, is that his name?
That's so funny because I was thinking, is his last name Carruthers? But I was like, that sounds so wrong.
I think that's a joke from something that we both know. That's got to be a quote that we both know. But there's Scatman John, and I think he did win a Grammy, but 7? Can I hear it one more time?
Yeah, I'm looking up John Carruthers and the people that show up. AAP's Cornell University. John
Scatman Carruthers. John's last name has to be different. I think that it's like a portmanteau somebody made as a joke, and it's just in both of our minds now.
I'll look it up. What jazz, R&B, and soul singer known as the Acrobat of Scat won 7 Grammys in their lifetime and is also known for singing the theme song for the TV series Moonlighting.
Okay. Moonlighting, starring Bruce Willis, if I remember correctly. But I don't think he's won many Grammys. I know he likes to play music. I don't think it's him. Scatman John, 7 Grammys? I don't know about that.
John Paul Larkin.
He's not a R&B soul. And what was the third genre you said?
R&B, jazz? Soul, and jazz. Scatman John does alarmingly look like a white version of Steve Harvey. I think it's mostly the mustache.
Yeah. Props to Steve Harvey for owning that mustache style. Yep.
I mean, you see it in the smile, too.
Looks like big a character for L.A. grin. Noir.
Yeah, like the annoying reporter. Mm-hmm. What do you say? Do you have a minute? Mm-hmm. I'd like to bend your ear.
Let's see here. Ah, man, So Louis Prima did a lot of scatting, but he's not soul or R&B. A little bit of jazz, but another Latin artist. Jazz. Jazz scat. R&B and soul. I feel like I could name some R&B and soul singers, but I can't name any that I know, like, oh, they scat.
We all I might scat.
I might have to just, like, throw in a wrong answer here. Thinking, like, my safety is Stevie Wonder, but I don't think that's right. But he is, I'm sure he's won at least 7 Grammys. I just don't really, I don't know a lot of notable scatting. Steven Tyler from Aerosmith, as many scat impressions slip into quickly.
Bonkin' on Hobo.
Mm-hmm. Or Honkin' on Bobo, as the case may be.
And Tim and Joey love the hit album by Aerosmith, Honkin' on Bobo.
Is that like a bluegrass album or something, or what they
do? It's a blues album.
Blues, okay.
A couple funny names for the harmonica, aside from Bobo.
Mm-hmm.
Mississippi saxophone, the tin sandwich,
mm-hmm.
The French harp, the reckless tram. I like Mississippi saxophone.
Reckless tram.
Yeah, it's pretty good, isn't it?
So you're just driving that thing. Just all go over crazy. The place.
Crazy go nuts.
Let's see here. scat.
We're out of control.
Jazz.
The first question is probably 30 minutes into the Why do you people still listen to us just talking?
It's fun to have all this harmonicas. Extra information. You know, I don't know. I'll go with Stevie Wonder.
I'm sorry, that's incorrect. The correct answer is Al Jarreau.
Al Jarreau.
Al Jarreau.
Oh, I don't also, know this acrobat of scat.
Yes, also known for adding lyrics to Dave Brubeck's Take Five and doing a scatted version of it. Very good. Good guy. Good
singer. Take five minutes.
Like he came up with all these different words, basically talking about like take time,
mm-hmm.
You know, out of your day to, you know, chill out is basically what, you know, what he did with it. Just stop and take a little time out with me. Oh, just take five. Stop your busy day and take the time out to see that I'm alive, So, yeah.
So he took, you know, Al Jarreau.
For those of you who don't know, the song Take Five by Dave Brubeck is in the semi-odd time signature of 5/4. So the name Take Five is a play on that. To take five, obviously, it means to take a rest, to take a break in music. So he kind of took the take a break, you know, portion of it and played on that.
Al Jarreau. Now R.I.P. I know Jarreau.
Yeah, you should listen to that version of Take Five. Throw it in the show notes if you please.
I'm going to do it.
Okay.
I'm going to do it.
All right.
Mark, a television listen question to this man for scat. You.
Okay.
What 90s kids TV show featured head puppet characters such as Baby Jeffrey, Big Pops, Cocktail Frank, and Mayor Dottie, and guest appearances by network favorites Phil Moore, Moira Quirk, and Mark Summers?
Wow.
Would you like the question one more time?
Yeah, can I hear that one more time? Mark Summers makes me think, at least. I know Mark Summers was involved in Double Dare, which was on Nickelodeon. I've never heard of the other people, I don't think. Yeah, let me hear the question one more time.
What 90s kids TV show featured head puppet characters such as Baby Jeffrey, Big Pops, Cocktail Frank, and Mayor Dottie, and guest appearances by network favorites Phil Moore, Moira Quirk, and Mark Summers.
Oh, man, I don't know if I know this. See, you know, I'm old, and, you know, 90s, by 1990, I was 10. Baby Frank, Little Dottie.
Baby Jeffrey and Cocktail Frank.
Baby Jeffrey, okay, I'm getting them all fucked up. Baby Jeffrey, Cocktail Frank, Little Dottie.
Mayor Dottie.
Mayor Dottie and Little...
Baby Jeffrey. Kim?
Big Baby Pops. Jeff, there is no little. Big, Big Pops. God. If there's any way I could get that more fucking wrong. Baby Jeffrey. Mayor Dottie.
Big Pops.
Big Pops.
And Cocktail and Frank.
Cocktail Frank.
These are all head puppet characters.
When you're saying like head puppet, like main characters, is that what you're saying?
Or no, it's a head puppet, human head, puppet body. Head puppets.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, okay. That completely changes.
Kind of okay. A distinguishing characteristic for the show.
I can say with a great amount of certainty that I don't know what this is. On Nickelodeon, a character or a cartoon or a show with characters that are just a head on top of a cartoon on top of a fake body. I have no idea. Mark Summers, Cocktail Frank. Sounds like a hot dog. It's like a fucking show about hors d'oeuvres. I'll just say Kitchen Talk.
Wrong. No, Mark. Phil Moore, you got the Nickelodeon thing right. Phil Moore was the host of Nick Arcade. Moira Quirk was one of the officiants on Guts, co-host on Guts.
Okay, that sounded familiar.
It was on Nickelodeon. The show was hosted by Mark Wiener. The show is called Wienerville.
Okay, I've heard of Wienerville, but yeah, I've never seen it.
Yep, it was known for its head puppet characters. And actually, Wienerville has trivia origins. The show featured a quiz segment that was called That's Not Fair, which was originally filmed as a pilot for Comedy Central. The executives found it more appropriate for kids, so it was passed to Nickelodeon. And ultimately, that is what led to the creation of Wienerville. It was originally started as a quiz show. But Mark Wiener himself is a puppeteer comedian, has grand ideas, and kind of a notable show in children's TV of the 90s.
Interesting. Huh. All right, here I have a question about cartoons later for you. Very interested to see if you get.
Good.
Question
good.
Number two. Born Carl Anderson Jr., what fashion designer redesigned his mother's wedding dress at 5 years old?
Carl Anderson Jr. A fashion designer that redesigned his mother's wedding dress at five.
5 years old, redesigned his mother's wedding dress.
So homie was looking at the picture and said, no, no, no. This will not work.
You cannot do this. What are you doing?
Was the wedding pending, or was it a wedding that happened in the past?
He was like, Mom, sit down. We got to talk.
Mm-hmm.
Mom, sit down. This dress is all wrong. Is probably what he said, because he was five. And he's like, what we need to do is we need to lengthen the twain. And she was like, all right, man, whatever. Do your worst. It was for his mother's second marriage.
Okay. So it was an upcoming. So
it was at this point that they changed their last name.
Carl Anderson Jr.
Carl Hungus.
Is that a fashion designer?
Carl Hungus is from The Big Lebowski.
Right. He's here to fix the cable.
He is. I just love hearing the dude read that name.
I think the answer that I'm going to go with here, it sounds like something that Liberace would have done. Like a young 5-year-old Liberace. I mean, how do you become Liberace but have all that time from the age of 5 to work on your craft?
Well, no, so, I did say fashion designer.
Liberace was a performer, but he didn't also I thought he designed his own costumes.
Oh, maybe. Well, I just pretty much told you it's not him.
He had very elaborate costumes. So, okay, maybe not Liberace then. Because you're clearly signaling to me that is not the correct answer. Because that would be very messed up if it was the right answer and you said that.
Well, I don't know, Lee. I'm making you triple check. Is that your final answer?
Yeah. Carl Anderson Jr. I just have no idea. Charlie, Charles, Chuck. Maybe he maintained Carl and Charles are two different names. Chuck, I don't think Chuck is a nickname for Carl, so that won't even work. Mark Jacobs, that sounds like a fake ass name. I don't know. That'll be my answer.
I'm sorry, that's incorrect. But you were going down the right avenue. The marriage when he was 5 years old, the marriage when he was 5 years old, where his mother got married again, she married a gentleman with the last name Coors. Michael and his mother said that you can change your first name also if you'd like to. And he changed his name to Michael Coors.
Okay. Interesting. Okay.
5 years old. Also designed the dress that Michelle Obama used in her first term as the first lady for her portrait.
Did not know that.
There you go.
Apologies to Mark Jacobs, if that is your real name.
He spells his name with a C. It's one of my few brethren.
Speaking of, as well as Mark Summers.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know about Mark Wiener. I think Mark Wiener is
Mark Jacobs
is
Mark Jacobs. He's just regular old Mark Jacobs.
Well, speaking of names, Mark, I have a pseudonyms question for you.
Okay.
Love these parallels. Mm. They just don't stop.
We flirt every day.
Silence Duguid. Celia Single. Alice Addertongue. Martha Careful, Margaret Aftercast, and Busybody are all pseudonyms of what American historical figure used when writing about women's topics?
It's got to be Ben Franklin. He's just fucking loony and opinionated. And I can't imagine it's a woman. He's probably smart enough to think that women would listen to someone more likely if they had a woman-based name. I don't know why he'd be talking about women's topics necessarily, but I think he was a pretty well-rounded guy. I'm going to go with Ben Franklin.
Mark, that is correct. Very good.
Yes.
Yep. He would use these Silence Duguid. He actually wrote 12 letters that became a bit of a plot point in the National Treasure movies. You might remember that he is looking for the Silence Duguid letters in that. Franklin used many pseudonyms in writing with the press and would sometimes even argue with himself in the press as two different identities to prove a point. So
that's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Fart proudly. I think he wrote that. He was proud of that one. He just wrote that as straight up Ben Franklin. Didn't use a pseudonym for that. But some of these other topics where he wasn't being a sarcastic asshole.
I would, if there's any founding father we could bring to today, mm-hmm. and get their like feel on how things are and like, you know, kind of in general, like see how they react to today's society. He's one of them.
Absolutely.
Inventor of the glass harmonica.
Mm-hmm.
Here's your third question. In 1839, and I misspoke earlier, by the way, this is not on the periodic table of elements, this thing I'm going to tell you.
Oh, thank goodness.
In 1839, when Christian Friedrich Schonbein noticed a pungent odor that was similar to the smell that often followed a bolt of lightning and was able to isolate the gaseous chemical, what did he name it?
What was his name? Chris Fred?
Christian Friedrich Schonbein. S-C-H-O with an umlaut, N-B-E-I-N.
And what was he naming again? A gas?
Yes.
1836?
1839.
39. I mean, it seems rather late for something like nitrogen. So this is maybe like, maybe it's like neon or something. I don't know when neon lights came about. Sometime in the 20th century, I imagine, after electricity was harnessed. Speaking of Ben Franklin. Maybe it's like Franklinogen. Oh, lightning. Here's this gas. It smells like one of Ben Franklin's nasty farts. Franklinogen. Did he know about Fart Proudly, Chris Fred?
I hope so.
Sean Beam.
Mary Fred.
Christian Friedrich. Sean Bean.
Schonbein. Schonbein.
He never survives the movies that he's in, Sean Bean. Or shows. Unlike his namesake, Christian Fred Schonbein, who discovered Franklinogen. I don't know. Neon? Boron? Lightning on? Lightning off?
This I can give tough. You a hint. I don't know if it'll give you the answer, okay. But I can give you a hint.
I would love one.
O3 is the chemical compound.
Hmm.
Three parts oxygen.
So it's super oxygen. It's like the third evolutionary state of oxygen.
There's regular oxygen. Then there's O2. Mm-hmm. Then fucking strap yourself in because there's O3.
Trioxylene. Yeah, I was talking about when you get three together, you know, I was just looking at that name. Thrice Great Hermes. I was talking about this in the Twitch stream. I'm not sure if you caught that part, but how great do you have to be thrice great? I mean, three times, obviously, but can you imagine if somebody was like, it's the thrice great Mark Davis? Shit, thrice great?
I mean, it's also to say that you had two valleys.
Well, sure.
You know what I mean? So it's like,
no one bats a thousand.
You had to start sucking at one point. It's like, it's better to just be once great and just stay great for like, the thing is people never ask, well, how long were they great? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I guess once denotes like past, not still, but just be like, no, when I say once, I mean still. That one time,
the still great. Going. Yeah, it's I suppose it's better to be the still great Hermes than the thrice great.
Mm-hmm.
Even thrice great, it implies like it happened already. It was then. Three times in the past. Three parts oxygen. Chemical that's three parts oxygen. I don't even know if it's a gas or not, but maybe it's glycerin. nitrogen and glycerin together? Is that nitrogen and oxygen together? No, that doesn't, that just doesn't sound right. And of course, now Bush is in my head.
They're in your head, in your head. And now the cranberries are in your head.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember glycerine. Yeah. Glycerine by Bush. And if he's like, three parts oxygen, glycerine. I don't think so, but I'm going with it anyway. Glycerine.
Wrong. I'm sorry, that's incorrect.
I didn't even wait for you to say it was wrong. I just knew.
Yeah, you just wronged yourself. Mm-hmm. The correct answer, every time lightning strikes, it releases a little bit of ozone. Ozone.
Oh.
O3. Ozone.
I knew that. Shit.
Originally, the smell was first found by some electricity over water. A little time before then, and then a little while after, Christian Friedrich Schoenbein smelled the same thing and realized that it was the same smell that he smelled after a lightning strike. He was able to get the smell stationary and realized that he found a new gas and called it ozone.
It's three parts oxygen, but there's only two O's in that name. You should put a third O in there.
Ozono.
Ozono.
Or ozone. But then we'd have to
I can't tell which one I like. The ozone layer. It's got a ring
ozono,
to it.
Ozono layer.
The ozono layered burrito. That's I think they're replacing the seven layer burrito at Taco Bell.
I can't believe they're getting rid of the seven layer burrito.
Or nachos.
Or, yeah, they're getting rid of Fritos. Like, they're getting rid of loads of stuff.
R.I.P.
That's what we get for not wearing masks. Mm-hmm. This pandemic just stretching out, and they're just like, well, we're going to get rid of all this other shit.
I could go without the, they're getting rid of all the potato items. I don't know if I've ever had a potato that came from Taco Bell.
Loads of vegans I know, like, lived and died by those potatoes.
Mm. Well, so I'm sure they'll replace it with something. I'm not sure. I'm not part of the board.
I was going to say, I don't know why the fuck you're so sure.
Mark, how about a sports question?
Oh, what about it?
Would you like it?
Sure.
What legendary athlete was known to dunk regularly in high school basketball games, turn down offers from the Yankees, Indians, Reds, Pirates, and Phillies, but is better known for guaranteeing and later satisfying his own team's victory at Super Bowl number 3. Dunked regularly at basketball games in high school, turned down offers from the Yankees, Indians, Reds, Pirates, and Phillies, best known for guaranteeing and later satisfying his own team's victory at Super Bowl 3.
I'm not sure I'm right here. But I think I am. It seems like, I think I'm just going to say it, because I think I know this. I think I know this because of the guaranteeing his team's win. And I believe it's Broadway Joe Namath of the Jets.
Whoops. I didn't give you a Zerbert there.
Oh, no.
That's correct. Oh. That's correct.
I was waiting for the ding, 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 and I just heard I was like, okay. Oh, I don't know what that means. Broadway Joe.
Joe Willie Namath. Yes. Besides being known as one of the most iconic American football players of all time, Namath was indeed multi-talented. You're right. He did, at a press conference, he was accused of, you know, you guys are going to take a loss at Super Bowl III. And he was like, no, we're not. And then they won. But he was multi-talented. He was fashionable. He established the trend of wearing full-length fur coats on the sidelines, mm-hmm. which is now not accepted in NFL regulations, but
no.
Was popular for a time, and found some success in business where he had a brush with infamy. I don't know if you know this, Mark, but at 26, Namath became an owner of a New York City nightclub called Bachelor's 3, but Soon after, NFL Commissioner Pete Rozelle convinced Namath to divest from the nightclub, as it was popular with both NFL officials, politicians, and members of organized crime. A line in his contract warned of suspension over association with notorious persons. So they were like, you got to get rid of this business, man. And he responded by booking a press conference to announce that he was not going to divest and actually would quit sports instead. But then took a look at his bills and said, you know what? Maybe football's the right option here. So he did go back and divested. He would go on to have a career outside of football anyway on the big and small screens. He's appeared in 10 films, starting with Norwood in 1970, and 18 television series, including The Brady Bunch, Married with Children. He was on The Love Boat twice and cameoed twice on The Simpsons, and even had his own talk show in 1969, which ran for 13 episodes.
And, you know, that only begs to the question that we talked a couple episodes ago about the Philip Marlowe. Was it, what was the child's name from Seen Elsewhere?
Oh, yeah. The snow globe theory. Timothy.
Yeah, I can't remember his name.
Timothy Treadwell.
I was thinking Timothy Treadwell. One of my favorite episodes of a podcast of all time. If any of those TV shows...
Tommy Westfall.
If any of those TV shows exist in Tommy Westfall's mind, mm-hmm. and Joe Namath is in the real world in cameos, then guess what?
Namath is a fictional being inside of Tommy Westfall's mind?
Yes, which means this whole world is.
Oh,
which
no.
is like... Yeah, which... Yeah, I mean, talk about meta... You've got a TV show where real life exists within it, shaking hands with it, and both of those worlds live inside a child's mind. It's like a vanishing room, a vanishing mirror.
I'm trying to find a list here so I can cross-reference.
Infinity mirror. I'm sure one of those
that
you
mentioned
has to be on there.
Oh, man. So many Tommy Westfall shows. This is like, there's like a grid chart that I'm looking at. I just want a simple list. Well, we'll look later, or you can miscorrect us on that. That could be a fun little like treasure hunt. Is Joe Namath real? Or is he
this
a fictional
guy for
character?
Real?
Welcome to the McLaughlin Report.
Wrong.
Joe Namath, real or unreal?
Amazing.
Joe Namath is a football player, an unreal being here. In this mortal landscape that we humans call Earth.
That we call Earth.
All right. So that is three questions for me.
That's the first round, huh?
That's it.
Let's take a quick break. And then let's come back with, do we have any no notes or miscorrections?
Yeah, we got mostly no notes.
Good, good, good. And then we'll do a second round of trivia.
Well, Mark, why don't we get started with round two here with some no notes? No notes. Okay. I do have one little self-miscorrection. We'll call it a no-no because I'm miscorrecting myself. Monte Cristo was the answer that I gave for a Caribbean island. I had to know, is that in the Caribbean? And the answer is no, it is not. It is off the coast of Italy, not in the Caribbean. So that is my small self-miscorrection, lest anybody be confused. Don't listen to me when it comes to geography. And we got one here from Andrew, a no-note. Andrew writes, hey, fellas, a quick miscorrection for you. Oh, I fucked up. This is a miscorrection as well.
Oh, well.
When Lee was sussing Mark's question about the soda, Simba, Lee had said that he thought Dr. Pepper was owned by Pepsi. I, being a weirdo who knows a lot about Dr. Pepper, know that Dr. Pepper is owned by the, quote, Dr. Pepper Snapple Group, which is in turn owned by the company Keurig Dr. Pepper. Great show as always, Andrew.
Well, thank you. Yeah, there are a couple of those brands that exist in like the nowhere, you know, that are kind of like standalone
free agents.
Brands. I don't know where 7-Up is now, but 7-Up is not a... there's Sprite and there's Sierra Mist between Coke and Pepsi.
7-Up must be owned by 7-Up Dr. Pepper Limited.
7-Up Schweppes.
It's just weird that Dr. Pepper has its name in the company, two companies above it. It's like its own sub-category.
Yeah, they just keep going, well, we're Dr. Pepper, owned by Dr. Pepper Inc., owned by Dr. Pepper and Keurig Holdings, which is owned by...
7-Up is owned by Keurig Dr. Pepper.
Wow, there you go. Well, geez, 7-Up got fucked in that deal, huh?
They're siblings. Yeah, where's the 7-Up in the name?
Hey, guys, can we be in the name? No. All right, okay, I'm sorry.
You come back when you've got Snapple's level of notoriety.
Right.
You're always hanging out with that Seagram's fella.
New York City, you got to drink Snapple. That's a rule. I found that out the hard way.
If you would like to write us with a miscorrection, a rate my question, or even just a little no note, you can write to us at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com. Call us at 1-929-356-6966. That's 1-929-356-6966. Or find us on social media.
Or find us in our homes and kill us where we lay.
Don't find me there. Find me elsewhere and let me know.
And no, I do not want to go into specifics about what happened with me and Snapple.
Oh, do you?
Wondering. No, I don't.
I thought you were quoting something.
No.
That's real? You're legally obligated to drink Snapple?
No. No, no, no.
I didn't know what the hell you were talking about.
Yeah, I don't either.
Mark's onto something here.
You just ran the other direction, and that's fine.
Mark, how about a Broadway revivals question?
Oh, great.
Is there ever a time you wish Jamie was sitting in the room with you right now? This would be that question, I think.
That's what I was going to say. That's a very loaded question. I'm just kidding. I love you, Jamie.
We need to have Jamie back on soon, I think.
Yeah, I know. I miss that fucker.
Yep. We've had a strong run here of guestless episodes, but I feel that guest energy returning, don't you, Mark?
Yeah. How do you people feel? What do they feel is mm-hmm. what I want to know.
These little runs like always remind me of our early episodes, you know, the first six. No guests.
One on one. Getting down mano a mano.
Manu e manu. Broadway revivals. What 2009 Broadway musical revival featured the songs Un Hombre Así and Me Siento Hermosa, with Stephen Sondheim's original lyrics translated from English to Spanish by Hamilton creator Lin-Manuel Miranda?
Lin-Manuel Miranda?
Yes. Is that how you pronounce it?
I believe so.
I might have put an extra syllable in there. Manuel.
Manuel.
It's not an instruction manual.
My mind immediately goes to Evita because that takes place somewhere where I believe they speak Spanish. They might speak Portuguese, but I'm not positive. Don't cry for me, Argentina. That's from Evita, yeah. Do they speak Spanish in Argentina, or do they speak Portuguese? They speak Portuguese in Brazil. Can you read it one more time?
Absolutely. What 2009 Broadway musical revival featured the songs Un Hombre Así and Me Siento Hermosa, with Stephen Sondheim's original lyrics translated from English to Spanish by Hamilton creator Lin-Manuel Miranda?
I think I have no real choice. What were the song titles again?
Un Hombre Así.
Okay.
And Me Siento Hermosa. Hermosa.
A man here, or it, what was the first one?
Un hombre así, A-S-I.
Así means so. A Man So. And the other one was...
Me Siento Hermosa.
I'm sorry, sister? My Spanish is pretty crude, and by pretty, I mean very. You're nodding, so thanks, and fuck yourself.
I wasn't nodding. That yeah, was a that was a breathing motion.
I wish we
Mark.
Were recording this. That no, was- that was nodding. It was so much so that I was looking at the recording of my voice, and I could see you go.
No,
I could see your glasses, Bob. It was like a, it was like you were giving a gnat a blowjob, maybe, but like I could still see your head moving Nat up Newton. And down. Nat Newton. Gnat Newton. I think I have no real choice but to go with a Vida. I just know it's something Spanish-esque, and it would make sense that they would sing it in Spanish. I'm going to go with a Vida.
Wrong. No, Mark, I'm sorry, that's wrong. How about the English
titles
to those
songs? Will you at least
tell
me it's a good guess?
It's a decent guess. I don't know that there was a 2009 revival of
I don't know.
But
I don't keep up.
The songs in English are A Boy Like That and I Feel Pretty.
I feel pretty, oh so pretty. Mm-hmm. I feel pretty and witty and gay. I don't know what it's from, though. I know, like, A Boy Like That and I'm So Pretty. Man, now I wish I had Jamie here. I know he knows this.
With Jamie here, I would have said, what 2009 Broadway musical revival? And I think he would have been on
it. Oh, it might have
right
been.
Right out
yeah.
the gate.
Fair enough. I don't know.
It is an update on Romeo and Juliet. West Side Story.
Oh, it is West Side Story. Mm-hmm. Huh.
Yep.
Okay.
In 2009, the show saw new Spanish translated lyrics. It also saw new takes on the music and a newer, tougher Tony character. Gone also was the final funeral procession where a bunch of teenagers haul off a body from a crime scene. They thought, let's make this a little bit more realistic and just let the crime scene stay. Debuting in December 2018, the English lines were restored by August of 2019, just 8 months later, with producers claiming that the largely monolingual audience wasn't getting the full story. Yet some Spanish lyrics did survive the culling to the end of the run. Actress Karen Olivia would win a Tony for her performance as the singer of Un Hombre Así, as Anita. And the cast as a whole would win a Grammy that year for the cast recording.
Which Tony did she win?
Not the the Tony that Curtis? Is the character in the in the play itself.
Ooh.
The Tony Award. See, because she didn't like Tony. A little bit of a plot detail there.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah. Well.
Well, there's a Steven Spielberg movie coming out. It's actually seeing a double revival. It was supposed to be this year, but coronavirus has pushed it back. So there's going to be a stage revival of West Side Story that features a giant video screen behind the performers instead of a regular set, and a Steven Spielberg-directed movie version.
I see the success of Cats is really getting a lot of people into motion here. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good. Here is your first question of the second round.
Real quick. Did you see Cats?
No.
You didn't?
No.
It's not that bad. It's kind of entertaining, actually. It is weird,
well,
though.
Well, entertaining is different than good.
Yes, I did not say it was good, Mark. I said it was entertaining.
Well, you said it was not that bad.
Uh-huh. Which is also not good.
Right.
Not bad, comma, entertaining. That is my review of Cats.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like 1.5 star out of 4.
I think that's about what I gave it.
Oh, okay. Originally started as Blue Ribbon Sports in 1964. What company later settled on a new name after their relationship with the Japanese company Onitsuka ended?
1964. And you just said it was a company.
Yes.
You didn't say it was like a sports equipment manufacturer. Anything like that. Just a company.
Yep.
named Blue Ribbon Sports. Yeah. Well, the blue ribbon means it's like the pinnacle. It's like the best. That's what you would give to the prize pig at the fair, a prize painting at a gallery.
Blue prized ribbon. Beer. Mm-hmm. Pabst.
Hashtag not mad. Blue Ribbon Sports. Well, there's Franklin, Wilson, Jose Canseco. He makes bats. No, he had a license. He licensed his name for some bats.
Blue Ribbon Sports.
Blue Ribbon Sports. Disney's Wide World of Sports. And the Japanese company was what?
Onitsuka.
Maybe it's the Olympics.
Onitsuka Tiger.
I mean, if you're playing the Olympics, you're getting like a medal. So maybe they had blue ribbons. And then in 1964, they thought, let's change it to the Olympics. I'm just obviously I'm being farcical here.
I hope so.
Sometimes, you know, when you host trivia and you meet players, a whole team of players that can't name one member of the Beatles, you start to wonder. You start to wonder about what people know and don't know. And I'm sure some smart people listen to our podcast and think the same thing about us.
Yeah. I've heard amazing things out of people's mouths, both related to trivia and not. Mm-hmm. So, nothing surprises me anymore, or not much.
Blue Ribbon Sports. Let's see here. So maybe they're interested in cataloging top tier players. Maybe it's some kind of like journalistic thing, like Sports Illustrated, for example. That I can see them wanting to refresh the brand in the 60s from Blue Ribbon Sports. That kind of has like a classic, you know, middle America farm style, you know, and maybe they just got like, you know, some photographers and they were like, let's illustrate these sports pictures as well as stories. So it could be Sports Illustrated. And you didn't say sports equipment manufacturer. That to me, I feel like you would have given maybe some other hint related to that. But that's a bit of a metagame. I'm going to go with Sports Illustrated. That seems to be a predominant.
I'm sorry, it's incorrect.
Oh. Wrong. Okay.
Just bummer. Cut you off. The correct answer, the company after the dissolution of their partnership with the Onitsuka Tiger. They were choosing between a couple different names. Falcon was one of the names they considered. Dimension 6 was one of the names they considered. They landed on Nike.
Nike. Whoa, really? They were called Blue Ribbon Sports?
Blue Ribbon Sports. They worked with a shoemaker in Japan called Onitsuka Tiger. Basically, the guy sold the shoes out of his car. He was basically contracted and started Blue Ribbon Sports as a way to distribute these Japanese shoes, which he did for a while. And he ended up making his own shoes and using and giving them to someone who is going to be in the Summer Olympics. Bill Bowerman was the guy's name, and he famously made the bottom of the shoes with a waffle iron.
Put that hot metal on that rubber and boom.
And that's how it got that the little pockets that you see.
Genius.
Indeed. So after splitting ways with Onitsuka Tiger, he decided to start his own shoe company. Dimension 6 was one of the names. Falcon was another one of the names that he was going to use, and he landed on Nike.
Nike, the Greek goddess of victory. I think that was a smart choice. Dimension 6?
Yes. No.
I don't know. That doesn't. And Falcon seems rather generic.
Yeah. Very agreed good. Completely.
Classical music, Mark. Classical music. Spanish composer Maurice Ravel's best known work, Bolero, begins with what woodwind instrument playing its iconic melody? Was inspired by a question you asked me once about the first instrument in a piece of music. I'm looking specifically for the one that plays the iconic melody, though, in Bolero.
I'm trying to think of what the hell Bolero is.
Well, I'll give you as a hint, it starts with drums. It's got kind of like a military like drum beat that runs throughout. And many instruments in the orchestra trade the melody, collaborate on playing the core melody.
Well, woodwinds, what do we got? We've got saxophone, flute, clarinet. I don't know how specific you're going to want, because there are multiple saxophones and multiple clarinets. Multiple flutes. There's piccolo. Flute. There's other flutes, too. I believe there's a bass flute. There is a clarinet. The bass clarinet. The contrabass clarinet. And then saxophone, soprano, alto, tenor, and baritone, of which I will be receiving in the mail a couple days after this episode drops.
And you're very excited.
I am very excited. And then there are some double reeds that I don't think count as woodwinds. If I'm going as for a numbers game, I should say saxophone and see if you say you need me to be more specific.
I can, if it might help, I can try to approximate the melody here to the best of my abilities.
Sure. I'll take that for sure.
Da 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 da.
Okay.
That was terrible.
It wasn't good.
That's generally the structure of it, though. The notes are wrong.
It was okay.
It's got kind of a dun da 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 dun da 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 dun da 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 dun 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 da 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 dun da 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 dun da 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 dun. Done. Man, and just those drums, I think that song is like 10 minutes long and I just messed up the rhythm singing it.
Done.
Playing it perfectly.
Yeah, sometimes that's your life. Try playing Pomp and Circumstance while fucking everyone fucking walks up to get their fucking diploma and you're going prep 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 prep. Prep, 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 prep. Oh my Christ. Seriously, just stab me in the back of my spine. God damn. just cut out whatever vertebrae makes it so I can walk. So I can just crumble to the floor and not do this anymore. Please. I want to say that's clarinet. And I believe clarinet was the answer to the question I asked you. Maybe it wasn't. I'm going to go with clarinet, though.
That's close, Mark, but wrong. It's close by proximity in which they sit to the flutes. Flute is the answer. Yeah, starts little light, not a piccolo, not a small flute, regular size flute. But that is the first instrument that plays the melody in Bolero. Bolero was commissioned by Russian ballet dancer Ida Rubinstein and started originally as a transcription of another work until Ravel found that it was copyrighted. So at that point, he was like, I can't do this. The individual that held the copyright was like, no, 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 you're awesome. Go ahead.
Yes, and you can.
Ravel at that point was just over it. He's like, I'm just going to start over and make my own composition, which he did, taking inspiration for the rhythm from his father's machinery and inspiration for the melody from a lullaby that his mother sang to him as a child. So deeply personal piece of music for him, actually.
And the guy's like, no, please. He's like, no. He's like, please do it. It'll make me so famous. And he's like, no, I've already got it in my mind. I'm not going to do it. He's like, oh God, please. Oh, that's funny. Huh. Interesting. Yeah. Flute.
Bolero.
Good for them. Bolero. Yes. All right. What is your next question? Your next question is this.
We should also point out that the flute does not have a wooded reed as many woodwinds do.
It doesn't.
So there's a little bit of a fun little trick there. Fun little trick. Not really a trick, because it is classified as a woodwind.
Yeah.
Just like a tomato is a fruit.
A little fact. Curious to know if you know this one here.
Probably not.
Question number two. What 2015 comedy slasher film starred Malin Ackerman, Adam Devine, Thomas Middleditch, Alia Shawkat, and Tessa Farmiga? A modern-day scream queen. How about that lineup?
Slasher comedy, yeah. Adam Devine, Thomas Middleditch from Silicon Valley.
Adam Devine, of course.
From the Workaholics.
From the Work of Holics.
Just got a package.
Bayou, okay?
He's telling me UPS is here.
Ooh.
And who were the other?
Malin Ackerman.
Mm-mm. Nope.
Nope. What?
Don't know him.
You don't know Malin Ackerman.
Mm-mm. Scott Ackerman related?
No.
Different Ackerman.
Malin Ackerman, the actress. She was in Watchmen.
Who did she play in Watchmen?
She played what's her face?
The lead.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's her name? Malin Ackerman? Yeah.
Malin Ackerman, yeah. She was in. She was also in Children's
Hospital. Not related
to
Scott Ackerman.
No. No. Silk Spectre in Watchmen.
Wait, in the movie Watchmen?
Yes.
Oh, I thought you meant in the TV show.
No.
Okay. Malin Ackerman.
She was in Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle.
Hmm.
She was in Couples Retreat. She was great in Children's Hospital. Super funny. Very beautiful. She's in Billions. Very funny. She's Swedish. She's from Stockholm.
Okay. They should have put her in Midsommar.
They should have. So Malin Ackerman, Adam Devine, Thomas Middleditch, Alia Shawkat, of course, most popularly of Arrested Development fame.
Mm. Does she play
Maybe? Oh, you didn't know. Yeah. Okay. Wow.
Okay.
Okay. Maybe you won't get that.
Yeah.
I thought I was going to name these people.
Sounds
and you're
going
to be like, whoa, heavy hitters. and Tessa Farmiga, who is a modern day scream queen. She's been on a bunch of seasons of American Horror Stories.
Okay. Story. 2015 comedy horror movie. Man, I don't know this. Scary Movie is a comedy slasher film that recently celebrated its 20th anniversary, which I didn't know, but I watched it on a whim like 3 days before. And then I saw the headline pop up and said, well, took care of that. Could be something like Scary Movie 6 or 7. I don't think it's a Wayne's. It doesn't sound like a Wayne's cast, though, here. Man, I just don't know. 2015 slasher comedy films, this is just not my genre. The cast sounds good. I might check this out. Are you sure that I know about this movie?
No.
I thought
it's one of those that I thought you probably, I had never heard of, but you probably knew all about, and I thought you were going to be like, oh yeah, duh, and you were going to tell me, but I'm wrong.
Nope. Maybe it's a parody. Maybe it's, no, I don't know.
I'm just now going to say, you probably don't know the name of this, I guess.
Yeah. Halloween, Friday the 13th. These are popular slasher movies. Scream. Scream louder.
Is that your guess?
Scream hard. Scream, I don't know. Hard. Yeah. That, either of those. I'll go with either of those.
All of those are incorrect. The name of the movie is The Final Girls. The Final Girls.
No, I've never heard of this. The Final Girls? Was it like a boss battle?
So it is about a group of high school students who are transported into a 1986 slasher film called Camp Bloodbath.
Hmm. And, so there's some time travel involved.
Yes.
Science, I believe, fiction.
So. Science fact.
Interesting.
But they basically get sucked up into this world of this movie. And yeah, it's got quite a cast. I was pretty shocked. I'm a big fan of Adam Devine, though I don't know what he's like in this movie.
I was going to say, so have you caught this? Could you recommend it?
I have not caught it, but I will say that the reviews were generally positive, is what it says. The critic is 72% approval on Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay.
So, you know.
Man, 70% approval. That reminds me, I was tooling around on the website albumoftheyear.org, which is like a album rating social network.
Yeah.
Kind of like Letterboxd does for movies. And I was listening to Stone Temple Pilots' debut album, Core. And I was like, why don't I look and see what some of the reviews on this, you know, while I'm checking out the site, see what the reviews say. And somebody gave it, one of the higher reviews was 70. And they wrote, congratulations, you made the best butt rock album of all time. And then the rest of the review was them trashing it. And I was like, you gave this a 70? Like, where do you stop? 69? Is that the lowest number you give?
Nice.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's very bizarre.
So I don't know. Sometimes when 70, I'm skeptical of 70s because I'm like, are you really rating this or are you saying that this is bullshit? Because I know video game reviewers fall into kind of the same trap. They don't want to like piss off the companies that are sending them the video games to review early. So they feel obliged to give a slightly inflated higher score. But generally positive. Yeah. I mean, you know, we don't do that on the Rate My Questions, by the way, guys. We're going to have one coming up. We're going to give you honest reviews there.
Yeah. Come on.
Famous quotes, Mark. Famous quotes. Why should all life be work when we all can borrow? Let's think only of today and not worry about tomorrow. Is a quote by which jazz age author, painter, socialite, and diagnosed schizophrenic who died in a 1948 hospital fire while awaiting electroshock therapy?
Wow. I don't know. And I'm kind of embarrassed I don't know. 1948. Painter, jazz singer,
jazz age author,
jazz age author and socialite. Mm-hmm. Not a singer. Mm-mm. I think I'm just thinking that because the words rhymed. How did Langston Hughes die? I know he died a while ago. Oh, no. No, he died. He died later on. Jesus Christ Almighty. He died later on because that thing I told you about. Oh, it was an episode of Radiolab with a jazz singer. And it's escaping my mind who it was. But she talks about the death of Langston Hughes, and it was during the civil rights movement. It's not Al Jarreau.
I almost forgot his name. I had to say it out loud. It's like, yeah. Shit, what was that guy's name? I already forgot. Al Jarreau. The acrobat of scat.
Oh, yes. The acrobat of scat junior. Thank you very much. So he died later. Gonna receive electroshock therapy. And the fucking hospital burned down.
Yeah, the fire moved through like the wooden laundry chute throughout the entire hospital, basically.
This is gonna be a weird question, maybe, but I don't know if you can answer this. Is this person not a singer?
Not a professional singer.
Okay. Because those words reminded me of lyrics.
Well, they were an author.
Right. And I don't know that my thought process there was, you know, is that I don't know that even if they were a lyricist, I don't know that I would be able to lock them into whoever really sang the song. Let's not think about tomorrow. What were the words?
Why should all life be work when we can all borrow? Let's think only of today and not worry about tomorrow.
Oh, why should all life be worth? You know, jazz age, painter, author.
And socialite. The painting is perhaps their least known characteristic. Failed painter might even be more accurate. Their work was not received as they hoped. But author, socialite, those I would say are fairly defining characteristics of this person.
I don't know. And I have a feeling I'm going to know this as soon as you say it. It's one of those that's hard to let go. A socialite and a... God, man. Failed painter. An author. Poet? Trying to think of someone who... Schizophrenic. Who would have been schizophrenic? Author. Schizophrenic author. Jazz age schizophrenic author. I'm going to say maybe one of the beat poets, Jack Kerouac, and who's the other one? Maybe just for shits and giggles, I'll say Jack Kerouac, because it sounds like poetry. There's the other dude that he chilled with. I'm going to say Jack Kerouac.
No, Mark, I'm sorry, that's wrong. You might be thinking of Allen Ginsberg. His pal, Alan Ginsberg. Yeah. That was a little bit later in the 60s. I'm speaking of Zelda Fitzgerald. Zelda Fitzgerald, wife of F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
Who deemed her the first American flapper. That is a another nickname that she goes by. I guess I could have included that as a hint. The two separated in their later years and remained estranged by the time of his death in 1940. Zelda spent her final days at a hospital in Asheville, North Carolina, before succumbing to a fire in a moment known amongst insensitive historians and quizmasters as the wreck of the Zelda Fitzgerald.
All right.
Wow, nothing on that one.
Sorry, I was reading my next question.
That's all right, you'll catch it on the episode.
I with my questions now, I try and like get information set up for you. And so sometimes when you're giving information, I get zoned in, and I just had a freak out because I just realized, I don't know if I know how to spell this, pronounce this guy's last name.
Uh-oh.
Usually I'm good about, you know, like, Tessa Farmiga. I didn't know how to pronounce her name. And even the guy earlier, the Ozone guy, Christian Friedrich, Schonbein. So like Schonbein, I looked for like 30 minutes on YouTube on how to pronounce this guy's name, but there are no videos that pronounce it. So then I just looked up the last name, and there's a woman who does puppeteering, with the same last name. And I tried to find interviews with her to see if anybody introduced her to pronounce her last name. I went to those lengths. Mm-hmm. But I just kind of immediately thought I knew how to pronounce this guy's last name, and then I just realized that maybe I don't. So we'll see what happens. That was what was going on in my mind right there.
Gotcha.
Here's your second question, or your third question. Mm-hmm. Ephraim Partible created what cartoon based off of his Loyola Marymount senior thesis project, Mess O' Blues? Ephraim Partible created what cartoon based off of his Loyola Marymount senior thesis project, Mess O' Blues? It was going to be a movie that he did for his senior thesis.
Hmm. Mess O' Blues. Cartoon. Indeed. Ephraim Partible?
Yes.
Well, two things come to mind. When I hear blues and cartoons, I think of first Blue's Clues. There was a live action component to that, though. Maybe Steve's real name is Ephraim Partible. Again, he did appear in live action for that. And Blue had a mischief streak. Maybe not. Maybe not mischief. Maybe that's the wrong word. But Mess O' Blues? I don't know. The other that is coming to mind is the show Baby Blues, which was on Adult Swim for quite a while, that I think was about new parenthood, which can certainly be messy.
I will tell you that this artist is known better as Van Partible. Hmm. Last name is Partible.
Hmm. Okay. Well, I don't think that's Steve from Blue's Clues. Seems a bit pretentious for his style. Hey, my name's Van Partible. I'm Van Partible.
My stomach just made the biggest growly.
I thought you had like a TV on in the background or something.
No, there was dogs and then okay. My stomach, like everything loud happened at once.
About his thesis project, Mess O' Blues. You know, I'm thinking about other messes of blues, and there are quite a few Smurfs. you might call a what is a group of Smurfs called? A mess. Maybe that's what he was going with.
Little terms of venery.
And yep. And I suppose if you're hunting them. Smurf hunter. I'm looking for a real mess. You see any messes of Smurfs around here?
They got a mess of Smurfs.
My name's Muldoon. I'm the game warden at Smurf Park. We keep them under control. I think I'm going to go with Smurfs. It seems like, you know, you've got this little society. Maybe it's like an anthropology project. I don't know the name of the creator of the Smurfs. I think he's French or Danish or something, but I'll go with the Smurfs. Van is, you know, fits within that too.
I'm sorry, that's incorrect. The artist's full name is Ephraim Giovanni Bravo Partible. Does that give you any...
Johnny Bravo?
The correct answer is Johnny Bravo, yes.
Oh, Mesa Blues, his blue jeans.
Yes. So his animation professor had a friend who worked for Hanna-Barbera and showed him Meso Blues and asked him to do a 7-minute pitch cartoon based on it that would end up becoming Johnny Bravo. While he was at Cartoon Network, he roomed with Craig McCracken. Do you know who he is?
I definitely recognize the name, but I can't put it to a show right now.
He was the creator of the Powerpuff Girls, Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends, and Wander Over Yonder. Also, Genndy Tartakovsky, who created Samurai Jack. Dexter's Laboratory.
Not Samurai Jack?
Maybe Samurai Jack, too. I'm not sure.
Clone Wars.
And he was... The only two cartoonists who worked at Hanna-Barbera, fresh out of college at the time, were Van Partible and a young artist named Seth MacFarlane, were both working there. And so Seth MacFarlane actually helped him work on, I believe, the first season of Johnny Bravo.
That's awesome.
Early on, yeah.
Wow. Long and rich career of Seth MacFarlane.
Meso Blues originally was going to be about 3 Elvis Presley impersonators.
Well, sounds like they found their direction soon enough.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Let's cut it down to 1.
Yep. Because of a time constraint, he was like, I'm just going to do it based on 1.
Good thinking. All right. Let's take another little break. And then, Mark, we have a rate my question from Katie.
Yeah.
Mark, welcome back. Hope your break was as enjoyable as mine.
Oh, I feel about 2 pounds lighter.
We did not talk during this break. We only urinated.
Yes.
Away from each other.
Yeah.
Again, perfect synchronicity.
Unfortunately. our moons are aligned.
We have a rate my question here to take care of, Mark. Take a look at, I should say.
Ray, he still lives within me.
And every once in a while, he peeks out.
Hello.
Oh, I'm still in here.
Will somebody let me out of here?
Please, for the love of God.
We have a rate my question from Katie Willemzig. Katie writes, got a movie TV rate my question for you. I noticed something of interest when I was watching Psycho on TV. And had to turn it into some trivia. And so this is a homebrew question from Katie here. Writing it on the fly while watching TV. I love that. That's how you do, Mark. You just pick it up in your day-to-day life, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I already know a couple Psycho facts. So I'm kind of preparing myself already.
Okay. Here's Katie's question. Alfred Hitchcock's 1960 film Psycho shows Marion Crane sign on the Bates Motel guest book as her alias, Marie Samuels. The last person to sign before her, whose signature is clearly legible in the scene, shares a name with one of comedy TV's most iconic lead characters of an ensemble cast, on a series which ran from 2005 to 2013 and won an Emmy for Best Comedy Show in 2006. What was this man's name? That is the question.
Wow. Katie.
Lots of info there.
Katie. What a great fucking question.
Mm-hmm. Alfred Hitchcock's 1960 film Psycho shows Marion Crane sign in on the Bates Motel guest book as her alias, Marie Samuels. Mm-hmm. The last person to sign in before her, whose signature is clearly legible in the scene, shares a name with one of comedy TV's most iconic lead characters of an ensemble cast on a series which ran from 2005 to 2013 and won an Emmy for Best Comedy Show in 2006. What was this man's name?
So ran for 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
Won Best whatever the second year they were on.
Mm-hmm.
Shares a name with the actor or the
character, it says.
Character.
Mm-hmm. Lead characters of an ensemble cast.
You got any ideas?
It's too late for Friends, right? Friends is 90s. This started in 2005. When did Everybody Loves Raymond come out? 90s as well?
99?
2000?
Might have been.
I feel like I was in high school still.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
King of Queens, didn't that spin off of Everybody Loves Raymond? Maybe a couple years later? There's King of Queens. There's Two and a Half Men. 2005 to 2013. Doesn't that feel right?
That could be pretty right.
What were
when
those
did all that Tiger names? Blood stuff happen?
2015, 2016, somewhere in there. 2014. When Charlie Sheen got fired.
Yeah.
And he got swapped with Ashton Kutcher.
And this series went from 2005 to 2013.
And it won an Emmy for Best Comedy Show in 2006.
Well, then this all is too early for Two and a Half Men.
Two and a Half Men could have started in 05 and wrapped up by 2013.
But I'm saying, if you're saying all that Tiger Blood stuff, that all happened while he was on the show, didn't it?
I thought it was afterwards. He had a long estrangement from the show that involved like a tour, maybe. And the press was just following him for like a year after that because I think he was HIV positive, and his girlfriend was giving interviews because she found out in the press, if I remember correctly. It was a mess. So I don't know
that 70s show. That was earlier, huh?
That was earlier, yeah. Maybe that 80s show. I know they waited a little bit to unleash that on audiences. 2005. Won an Emmy for Best Comedy Show in 2006. Could it be 30 Rock?
Liz Lemon? Oh, it's an actor.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is we need to... I mean, I'm wondering if it's, you know, going to be someone that... The name is a very popular name. One that you would see and you would be like, oh, what about The Office?
The Office.
Michael Scott.
That name sounds like it could work in old timey 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
Psycho, as well as that is a good guess. 2005.
That's what I'm wondering. Is that too late?
I think so.
Shoot me down, brother.
Parks and Recreation.
Well,
could it be?
How many seasons was The Office? I guess that's one of the first things to wonder. 9, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think 9. I think. Best Comedy Show in 2006. Did The Office only win one Emmy for Best Comedy Show? That seems unlikely.
How many seasons was Parks and Rec?
A lot, like at least 7, I think.
Could it be 8?
Could be. So who's the the male lead in Parks?
I was going to say, so I mean, it would be Ron Swanson.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be Andy Dwyer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of them.
Andy, I feel like they're both supporting characters on that show. Now, maybe she's just saying iconic lead character. Maybe that's a mistype, but if she means lead, Michael Scott, I feel is better. I think I know this. Kyle's stepping in here.
I keep hearing sus, and I think
she says she hears the sus. Hold on, come here, come close to the microphone. Kyle Ann, everybody.
Hi, Kyle Ann. Well, she can't hear me. Tell her I said, hi, Kyle Ann.
Okay, just getting these headphones on. Okay, so.
We call them cans in the business.
So, it's a 2006 Emmy Award-winning comedy series.
Yeah, so it ran from 2005 to 2013. And we're looking for the name of a lead male.
Yes.
Oh, you know this.
Yeah, it's How I Met Your Mother. It's Ted Mosby.
Ted Mosby, 2005 to 2013.
Yes. Actually, wait. Oh. Now that I think about it, I think How I Met Your Mother was 2004. No, 2005. It's got to be 2005 because like it was just in its like third season when I was graduating high school, which was 2006. My guess is yeah, it was when I graduated high school.
It was in its third season?
Something like that. It was like, yeah.
Then we're looking at 2003, aren't we?
Maybe. I don't remember. I'm just saying, I feel like the answer is Ted Mosby, but maybe I'm wrong. And the thing is, the spirit of that show is like, that would be on brand for the show, for them to take a name from Psycho. I mean, y'all can keep sussing, but that's my input.
Well, I appreciate your input. Thank you.
I just keep hearing you sus, and I'm like, he's missing a huge Emmy Award-winning comedy series during that time period.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, that's my 2 cents.
That seems a little analogous to like when you're playing trivia at the bar, and the person that's not playing is sitting next to you, and they're like, this is the one I know. And then they pass you the answer.
She came in with Seth-esque self-assuredness.
Yeah.
And ultimately was like 50% at best. She came in like she like was like absolutely positive she knew it. And by the time she left, she was like, well, that's my guess. I don't know.
Yeah. So at first I was thinking Ted Mosby sounds like Michael Scott as a name seems like there's a greater coincidence. There would be a greater degree of coincidence for Ted Mosby than Michael Scott. Michael Scott is a more common name, you know, so mm-hmm. The idea that they would share a name is not that far off. Ted Mosby would be a little bit more weird of a coincidence, but what she said about the creators maybe taking a name from Psycho for the character, that could be. That might be.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, you know, to be honest with you, I don't really know when How I Met Your Mother started.
She seemed pretty confident on that, the years.
Well, but she said something like, it was in its third season when I graduated. But it seemed to me like the math didn't add up to what she was saying. That it would have started in 2005.
Yeah, math is not our strong suit in this house. Nor is knowing trivia. Asking trivia we're good at.
Yeah. Good at coming up with questions. Good at asking it.
Yeah.
Not so good at the answering part.
I'm definitely going to need a guest to sus with next week. We'll see, though. We'll see how we do here. What do you think? Should we go with Ted Mosby or Michael Scott?
Is there someone else we're just completely whiffing on?
2005 to 2013, Tracy Jordan, but is he a main character, lead character on 30 Rock?
2005, when did John dress as Moe's from The Office?
All day, every day.
I'm trying to think of like when like he really first started doing that whole thing.
Back on his second watch.
15 years ago? 15, well, a little less than 15 years ago, 12 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That could be in the show's like second or third season. Ran in 2013. 9 seasons.
Are there 9 seasons of How I Met Your Mother? I only watched the pilot. I find the laugh track unsettling now. It's hard to watch shows with laugh tracks.
Yeah, unless they're bad. Then you need the laughter to help it along. Mm. It's like some kind of assisted. I kind of want to go with The Office, I think.
Let's do it. Michael Scott. Should we lock it in?
Sure, yeah, let's lock it in.
All right. Mark, we're right. It's Michael Scott, Steve Carell's character on The Office.
I was thinking afterward, I was like, well, there's also the character in the UK version of The Office. Ricky Gervais's character. We have kind of an extra chance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, look at even there, they couldn't help but have the same name. I wonder why that is. No. I think it seems to be such a ubiquitous or a common name. You know, why not? As far and all these extra details here about the time that it ran, when it won an Emmy, lead male character, that helped a lot. So you're right. Just knocking out any lead female characters from the equation. So yeah, let's see here. Alfred Hitchcock's 1960 film Psycho shows Marion Crane sign in on the Bates Motel guest book as her alias. Marie Samuels, the last person to sign in before her, whose signature is clearly legible in the scene, shares a name with one of comedy TV's most iconic lead characters of an ensemble cast on a series which ran from 2005 to 2013 and won an Emmy for Best Comedy Show in 2006. What was this man's name? That is the question, Mark. How do you feel about that question?
The only thing I might do is trim a little off the front. Giving like the year that Psycho came out and stuff, that isn't really necessary because in the end, Psycho really has not much to do with the question.
The only thing with that is I don't know if it holds up in the remake. There was that shot for shot remake of Psycho.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so that's fair enough.
If that's a differentiating factor, might be worth keeping that.
Right. Yeah. But other than that, it's good. I mean, it's a little wordy, but it's my questions for you and for the podcast have been making a little wordier because I've been packing in some information, like the Trevor Horn and Jeff Downs question from last week. We're giving you multiple information about each person, so it's it's a lot of information, clue wise and information wise. I would give it an A+. I think it's a great question.
Okay, I'm going to dock it some points because I agree. I do think it's a little wordy. I took a crack at rewriting it, and I did. I checked the word counts. Katie's original is 75 words.
Oof.
I got it down to 35, and I think it's got mainly all the information still present. So let me know what you think. In Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho, what name appears above Marion Crane's in the Bates Motel guest ledger? I guess I should change that to Marie Samuels. Yeah. But anyways, let me start at the top here. In Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho, what name appears above Marion Crane's in the Bates Motel guest ledger that is shared with an iconic lead character from an Emmy Award-winning comedy series that ran from 2005 to 2013?
Yeah, so that's
it's good. Got a lot of the same information. It misses that the Emmy was won in 2006. You might surmise it's an Emmy Award comedy series that ran from those. So
that was definitely a huge helping point for us, though.
It was.
2006 was fucking very, very important.
Mm-hmm. So it might adjust the difficulty a little bit, taking it down. But It just felt a little long. I know that's a style, you know, that some prefer. Some like having, you know, a longer question. But I would give it a solid B plus as is. It's a great question. It's Hitchcock is always popular. The name thing is interesting. It has lots of built-in hints, which I love. You know,
I feel like there's a lot that could. I think there's a lot that could be trimmed off the first half of it. You know, as far as you know, just like wording it a little bit less with regards to, like, you know, mentioning the ledger and this person is using this as an alias. Like, a lot of that stuff doesn't matter. Like,
I've never looked at that screen and been like, I'm memorizing all of these names.
Right. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I mean, if anything, you memorize the name Michael Scott because it's Michael Scott. You know,
it sticks out now.
And it's funny because I'm realizing now I know a Michael Scott and I know an Andy Bernard. So yeah. I have two friends that naturally have names from The Office, and they're both probably very mad.
Yeah. It's like in Office Space with the Michael Bolton guy. Mike Bolton. It was fine until that dickhead came out. Came around.
Are you ready for your last question?
Yes, Mark.
Here we go. There are only 6 desks that have been used in the Oval Office. Did you know that?
No.
The Resolute Desk, the Roosevelt Desk, the Wilson Desk, the Johnson Desk, the Hoover Desk, and the C&O Desk. Out of all those desks, the C&O Desk has only been used by one president. Who is he?
Good question. I was hoping you were going to ask me many of them and say, what is the last one? And I was going to say it was the Goya desk. As current events have shown. The C&O desk. What does C&O stand for? Chief, commander in chief, command and officiate, command and operate, George Washington could be the commander. The C&O desk. C&O. The little that I know about this is I'm almost certain that JFK used the Resolute Desk because I saw it in comparison to the Goya desk in a meme. I get my information just like most people these days through the memes.
Through all the memes. Mm-hmm. Through the meme-iverse. The meme-iverse.
The C&O. Command. The Conquer and Ostracize Desk, ruled over by Andrew Jackson. Asshole. I'm going to go with Washington. I don't know why. Maybe it's the order because it's the last. It's like we're going back and back and back in time. Did you say it was in the Oval Office?
Yes.
Can't be Washington then. There was no Oval Office.
There you go. Now you're thinking.
Whew. All right. 44 left. The C&O. Can I hear the names of all the desks one more time?
Absolutely. The Roosevelt, the Hoover, the Resolute, the Johnson, the Wilson, and the C&O.
So some of these are named after presidents. And others are not? Which are the ones that weren't? The Resolute, the...
Roosevelt, Hoover, okay. Roosevelt, Johnson, okay. and Wilson.
And Resolute is the only other one that's not a president's name, then, other than CNO?
Yes. Yeah.
Huh. Okay. It would be interesting if it was one of those presidents. And they got, like, a second one. So it's not Kennedy. C and O. Maybe it's Lincoln. I don't know what C and O would stand for. I'm just trying to think of rather notable presidents. Oval Office. It was in the Oval Office. The C and O desk. The Circle and Oval desk. Unfortunately, this isn't a witticism competition, so I'm going to have to come up with an answer here. I'm going to go with Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln.
I'm sorry, that's incorrect.
Goose egg.
So Roosevelt desk was used by Taft, Wilson, Harding, and Coolidge. Hoover and F.D. Roosevelt both used the Hoover desk. Switched back to the Roosevelt desk for Truman and Eisenhower. Kennedy was the first person to use the Resolute desk. Johnson used his own desk, the Johnson desk. And Nixon and Ford both used the Wilson desk. Switched back to the Resolute desk for Carter, Reagan, Clinton, I'm sorry, Carter and Reagan, George H.W. Bush brought in the C&O desk, and then back to the Resolute desk for Clinton, George W. Bush, Obama, and now Trump.
So Lincoln had a square office, I presume.
I don't know.
No. Probably Oval not. Office, though. Because he started much later yeah. than him. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Chesapeake and Ohio Railway is what C&O stands for. The C&O desk built around 1920 is one of four desks built for the owners of the Chesapeake and Ohio Railway, and it was later donated to the White House.
So H.W. was just walking through the White House and saw the desk and was like, I put that in the Oval. I want Maybe. That desk. I don't know if he had railway ties or.
It says it was donated to the White House and it was placed in the Oval Office study. Ford, Carter, and Reagan all used to use the desk there at mm-hmm. different times. The desk was moved. Vice President George H.W. Bush started using the desk as his main workspace in the White House. Under both Presidents Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush was asked about Bush's use of the C&O desk. He stated that, quote, he got used to it, found it comfortable, and thought it was attractive.
Desk preference.
Desk preference. He had worked there for 2 years as vice president and or 2 years for 4 years as vice president. And I guess decided, you know what? I'm just going to get that moved right in there.
That's mine now. That's mine.
Go ahead and move that.
Mark, my last question for you deals with celebrity business ventures. That is the category.
Okay, celebrity business ventures.
What common two-word phrase describing a custom among food lovers in the United States did LeBron James attempt to have trademarked in 2019?
8 years, not 4 years. He was vice president. Can I get it one more time?
What common two-word phrase describing a weekly custom among food lovers in the United States did LeBron James attempt to have trademarked in 2019?
That's what I thought you asked. This is your last question for me, huh?
Mm-hmm. You know this.
I do. I mean, you know that I I follow some sports.
Mm-hmm.
I am also a subscriber to the Patreon, The Flagrant Ones, mm-hmm. with Sean and Hayes of Hollywood Handbook, which I am wearing a Hollywood Handbook shirt today. And Carl Tart, Comedy Bang Bang, frequent guest. And they do it all on the NBA. LeBron James, they all stan a king. And I believe the term is Taco Tuesday.
Taco Tuesday!
He loves a big Taco Tuesday.
Yes, as do I. How about you?
I also love a Taco Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. It was a bit out there, though, I think, of him to try and trademark the phrase. You know, putting himself out there a little bit.
Weird.
The refusal came from the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office at 6:26 p.m. on September 11th, 2019.
Never forget.
A day that will live in infamy. Finding that Taco Tuesday is a, quote, commonplace message and therefore fails to function as a trademark. Just don't ask Taco Johns of Cheyenne, Wyoming, who has reportedly held the trademark for over 3 decades. I think it's time to get a new lawyer. What do you say?
Yeah, Jesus Christ.
Yes, currently it is trademarked. I think that's a statewide trademark, though.
Okay.
In Wyoming. But the office claimed that denying LeBron James the trademark would protect its usage for everyone. So we could even have Taco Tuesday here on the no-no if we so desired. But don't worry, we won't be attempting to trademark that. We'll be using your hard-earned Patreon-supporting dollars for that silliness. We've got other nonsense for you. Trivia nonsense.
Indeed. We got no nonsense.
Mm-hmm. Trivia Tuesday. We could copyright that, trademark that.
We could.
We're not going to, though.
Give you an extra day to put out an episode.
Yeah, just because of alliteration. Trivia Tuesday.
Why not?
Yep.
You know, Thursday begins with a T also.
Oh, that's true. Shit. we'll have two hashtags.
There you go.
Hashtag Trivia Tuesday, hashtag Trivia Thursday.
Hashtag Trivia Newton John.
Hashtag thank you for listening, everyone. Please join us every Monday morning for a new episode by subscribing to No Nonsense Trivia on your favorite podcast platform. You can support the No-No in several ways, the easiest by sharing this episode on your social media accounts with your friends. You can also leave us a written review on your favorite podcast platform, and you can support the podcast on Patreon by visiting our website, thenono.com, and clicking the support link at the top, which will take you to our Patreon page.
Hashtag thank you to our Patreon supporters for helping us out with the show, including Quiz Daddies Dylan, Tommy, and Tim. Our team captain's Gil.
It's Gil.
Kristen, Fletcher, Rachel, Aaron, and David, Holbrook. Thanks to our proverbial lightkeepers, Christopher, Logan, Spencer, Caitlin, Manu, Mo, Nina, Michael, Matthew, Luke, Marissa, Justin, Hank, Nicole, Cooper, Sean, Carly, Chris, Elise, Josh, and last but not least, Lucas. And thank you to our Rumpelstiltskins, Tiffany, Allison, Paige, Kenya, Jeff, Efren, Steven, Michael C.
Mike, commission a classical music piece from Ravel.
Michael S.
Mike, Spanish language.
And Michael J.
Mike J, thank you for supporting us. Our first supporter ever on Patreon, Mike J. Thank you so much.
Yes.
If you'd like to write us with a rate my question or miscorrection, you could do so at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com or call us at 1-929-356-6966. And please follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at No Nonsense Trivia and on Twitter at No Non Trivia.
We have a Facebook group and you can join it. Just go on Facebook and search for the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast to join us there.
Katie, only giving us a great rate my question this week, but posting some cool maps for us to look at in the Facebook group.
Absolutely. We've had a lot of people posting stuff that they just happened to run into ever since hearing our episodes, and it is always a hoot.
Mm-hmm. The moments that they enjoy while listening to us, that always makes us feel good, too.
The Bader-Meinhof effect. It as soon as you hear something, you notice it all over the place.
Yeah, I can't stop seeing Amy Heckerling's name everywhere now that you've mentioned it. It's crazy. Yeah,
absolutely.
Out of the loop.
And finally, as mentioned earlier, please do not forget to leave us a rating on your favorite podcast service.
Five stars only, please. Until next time, no-nonsense listeners, have a great week.